Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my webpage at dr-history.com for over 440 true stories of the Old West. Also, now available on Amazon, my first book, a historical fiction based on true events entitled Coal Miner to Cowboy. The story of a young man born in England in 1850. He wants to be a cowboy and makes his way to America, travels from New Orleans to Independence on a steamboat, hires on as a teamster to Santa Fe, then on a cattle drive to Bozeman, Montana. He also rides shotgun on a stagecoach. He travels with a wagon train, and on his two-year journey, he meets some famous people and keeps a journal of his adventures. The book contains a lot of the true stories from my podcast and is now available on Amazon. Visit my webpage for a link to Amazon for the book, Coal Miner to Cowboy.
And right now, without further ado, the One-Armed Bandit. Good morning, Dr. History.
Good morning, Zeb.
Pull that mic over just a little closer to you, or sit closer if you can. I know you only got... The book is balanced.
How's that?
That's pretty good. You balanced everything.
I'm getting better at left-handed stuff.
I'm worried about you knocking over the water, though, onto my computer.
Let me move that.
Now, please, like 10 feet away, if you would. I don't want to be like Moses parting the Red Sea here.
All right.
Okay. What's going on?
Oh, well, you know, we've talked a lot about the Transcontinental Railroad.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about Hollywood anymore.
No, we're going to give that a little rest.
Oh, I enjoyed that.
I know you did.
Okay.
We might pick it up again sometime. So, you know, once the railroad was built, we thought everything was rosy and dandy and everything was wonderful for everybody.
Now, when you say the railroad, the Transcontinental, and it went from where to where?
Let's see. Was it Independence to
Sacramento?
Sacramento.
I think it was, wasn't it?
I believe it was, Sacramento.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but then you had all these other lines going off from the Transcontinental Railroad.
Right.
So, like I say, things may have seemed like everything was wonderful for everybody, but not so
much. Oh, really? So, and where does the problem lie?
Oh, you'll see. Okay. Right here. So, picture this. There's a railroad man who turned up at the Henry Brewer homestead and at the border of Tulare and Fresno counties, California.
Been there.
On the morning of May 11th, 1880, a government man came with him prepared to evict Brewer from the field of wheat adjoining the homestead.
Whoa.
All right. The wheat was prospering because Brewer had devoted 5 years to cultivating this kind of semi-desert of the San Joaquin Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, you could probably picture that, right?
Oh, without the irrigation system? Yeah.
But it was growing on railroad land.
Uh-oh.
Okay. Land granted by the government to the Southern Pacific Railroad along the railroad's right-of-way. And now the government was about to turn it over to the Southern Pacific to sell to someone else.
I see.
Now, curiously, Henry Brewer, who was about to lose both land and crop, stood away from the proceedings. He was peacefully plowing another field in a remote corner of his homestead.
Mm-hmm.
And what Brewer saw from this safe position was a scene of violence and bloodshed that would become known as the Muscle Slough Tragedy.
The Muscle Slough Tragedy. I have not heard of that.
Yeah, I hadn't either. So the government man at Brewer's homestead, a United States Marshal named Alonzo Poole, was armed with a pistol and a court order for Brewer's eviction.
So he's out plowing in the field.
Yeah, he sees them pull up over there, say, a mile away.
Okay.
So he's not right all there. Right. So this marshal's got a pistol and a court order to evict Brewer off this land that he's been growing crops on.
Right.
Well, accompanying him in a light buggy was the railroad man, a land grader named William Clark, one of the agents who set the prices at which the Southern Pacific proposed to sell its land.
Okay.
Now, riding separately in a farm wagon were two local customers of Clark's and the railroad's, a guy named Hart and another guy named Crow. And earlier that morning, Marshal Poole had evicted a pioneer from another homestead and confirmed that this buyer, Hart, was the new owner of that land.
He threw them off what they thought was their property.
Well, let me keep going.
Hurry. I'm anxious.
Okay. So now Crow, the other buyer, was to receive Brewer's wheat field. He already had paid the railroad $1,624 against a total purchase price of $6,288.
Okay.
So you've got these two buyers. Okay. One's already bought some, kicked another guy off his property.
Okay.
Or his, where he was growing.
All right.
Okay. And now the other guy is going to kick Brewer off his property. Now get this. The two buyers are armed with three pistols, a Spencer rifle, two shotguns loaded with big lethal pistol balls instead of buckshot.
Holy.
They're kind of anticipating that there could be a problem.
Yeah.
Right?
And when you say kicked off, you mean like immediately?
Yeah. You leave your crop, you walk away.
Wow.
Okay. And keep in mind, these guys have been doing this for 5-6 years, developing this and growing their crop.
And the home and everything is left there?
Yeah. If they had built a home on that property, same thing.
Wow.
So as the buggy and the wagon drove onto the homestead, a party of 15 or more horsemen led by a farmer named James Patterson intercepted them.
Okay. Now, he's one of the good guys.
Yeah. He's okay. One of the farmers
all right.
That's been farming.
All right.
So all or most of these men are armed with pistols, and all had reason to believe they would soon find themselves in Brewer's fix, because since 1878, the railroad had been seeking to evict them from land that they had developed.
How did they get into this fix without knowing that this might happen?
No, they knew it was going to happen, but they thought that they'd be able to buy the land themselves.
Oh.
Be able to buy it back.
I see. Okay?
Here's where it came to not be
the
so good.
The plot thickens.
Yes. The next 30 seconds or so were never fully reconstructed. Almost simultaneously, a farmer named James Harris fell dead with a shotgun blast to his abdomen.
Oh, my.
And Hart, one of the buyers, fell from the wagon, mortally wounded by a pistol bullet in the belly. As his team bolted, Crow, the other buyer, had seized a shotgun from the wagon, and he apparently did most of the firing that followed. Now, according to some accounts, he brought down a man named Knutson with 12 slugs. He killed another guy named Daniel Kelly, shooting him off his runaway horse. Another guy, Archibald McGregor, he mortally wounded him. Then Crow was challenged by a guy named Henderson, and he shot and killed him. So this is the buyer. And remember, I told you they came loaded with
So the
guns.
Buyer perpetrated all the violence.
Yeah. Probably started the whole thing.
Why couldn't they have negotiated something?
Good question. Because here's these 15 farmers wanting to, let's work this out.
Were all they, the farmers, were they armed also?
Yeah, they had pistols. But, yeah. The other two guys, they were loaded for bear. I mean, so somebody else said that Crow, the one buyer, had fired the first shot.
Oh.
And Marshall Poole told Crow after things settled down, he said, you better get the heck out of here. And a mile and a half away on a bridge, somebody whose name was never revealed shot Crow dead with a single bullet in the back.
Now, Crow was the representative other buyer. Of the railroad.
No, he was just a buyer.
He was a buyer.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the two okay. buyers are now dead.
Okay, they're gone.
They're gone. So seven men fell on that sunny California morning in a battle over the land, one sector of a railroad's right of way. The battle could have erupted along many sections of the right-of-way of the great land-grant railroads of the West. In this case, the railroad, in this case, was the Southern Pacific, and the battlefield was this place called Muscle Slough.
And it didn't have to happen.
It didn't. It was, like I say, these buyers, I think they were just looking for a fight.
Well, it was kind of like, if you get in our way, we're going to squash you like a bug.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the violence kind of traced its origin back to 1865, when the Southern Pacific was chartered to build south from San Francisco to Los Angeles and San Diego, and received from Congress the customary grants of land along its route. So that was all legal and fine. The railroad did not take immediate title to its land, but it invited the settlers to build farms there and declared, quote, if the settlers desire to buy the company gives him the first privilege of purchase at the fixed price, which in every case shall only be the value of the land without regard to improvements. The lands are offered at various figures from $2.50 upward per acre. Most is on sale from $2.50 to $5 per acre.
So let me kind of put this in layman's terminology. These homesteaders had the option the first right option exactly. of procuring the land that was in question to the railroad to incorporate it into their farm.
Right, because they had land adjoining.
And this was just totally disavowed by these buyers.
Exactly. So Tulare County in southern San Joaquin Valley, actually it drew its name from a big section of kind of marsh reeds and stuff. That's why they called it a slough. Anyway, not very good land, actually, to be growing crops on. But these homesteaders on the land in the public domain, these settlers staked out farms on the adjoining railroad land.
I see.
So you can see that, you know, here's this land that we're going to be able to buy for $250 an acre at some point, be able to buy it cheap someday. And for years, this was really a rough existence for these guys. I mean, the land was either swampy or desert-like, and in a year of drought, it was all desert, a terrible desert, said one visitor, with soil generally dry, decomposed, and incapable of cultivation, said all it had was scorpions and rattlesnakes. And, but by this, by their hard labor, these farmers, they actually made an irrigation system.
Oh, yeah.
And brought water to this soil, the railroad land and their land.
Yep.
By 1878, the land was blossoming. I mean, rich in barley, wheat, fruit. It was really looking good. And the railroad was there, and they would take the harvest to market, carry it to harvest. And by 1878, the railroad took formal title to its land grant and sent men like this land grader, William Clark, to appraise this land to see how much it was worth.
Why did the railroad let this happen? I mean, you had your buyers for these pieces and parcels of land.
Yeah.
But why did the railroad let this escalate to this?
Well, here's what happened. This guy, this William Clark, he set the price of the railroad land at $25 to $35 an acre.
Ooh.
10 times what they were promised.
Yeah.
They were promised $250 at the most.
Didn't they have a contract?
No, it was just kind of an agreement. Okay.
Mm.
So at first, the settlers made the proposition that this was in disbelief, that this was outrageous to charge 10 times more what they were anticipating.
And they had farmed that for quite some time.
Yeah, 5, 6 years, 7 years. So they sent a letter to Charles Crocker, the railroad owner, and remind him of the railroad's promise of low land prices. Well, very coldly, he pointed out that the promise had been $2.50 an acre and upwards.
Oh,
in other words, the word upwards means we can charge whatever we want.
Yeah.
So anyway, the dispute went to the courts. It remained there for years. The settlers were never able to concede that these cases could go against them. In their eyes, the justice of their cause was self-evident.
How did they take and throw these people off the other land?
Oh, no, they kept their own land. They had the adjoining land that was theirs. They had just started farming the extra land that they thought they could get for cheap. So, nevertheless, you know, on the final ruling of the courts, more than 200 families were evicted from their homes and lands.
Wow.
So the court sided with the railroad. So, you know, in the settler's case still lay before the Supreme Court on the morning of the killings at the Brewer homestead, and the farmers involved in those killings were actually popular heroes. That winter, five of these men were found guilty of the minor charge of obstructing a federal officer in the discharge of his duty and sentenced to 6 months in jail. Well, their stay in the Santa Clara jail lockup was somewhat of a joke. The doors of the cells were left unlocked. They were permitted to leave the jail now and then.
Are you talking about a jail or a hotel?
Well, almost the same. They were permitted to leave, and some of their wives and children moved right in with them and to serve time with them. And the public saw to it that they had comfortable family quarters that were fitted out with nice furniture and stuff like that.
Was anybody held responsible for the murders?
Because the two owners, or the two buyers, were dead. They are the ones that perpetrated the whole thing, and they were now dead. So, but donations of food poured into the jailhouse from individuals in almost every state. A French chef who happened to be serving time in the jail prepared gourmet meals, and the five men finally ended their imprisonment.
Oh, my.
but public opinion alone could not settle the rights and wrongs of the shootout. So the Southern Pacific, with all the other railroads in the West, had a case of their own, and these railroads claimed and deserved credit for turning the empty West into a place for man's use. So they were responsible for settling the West.
But you're making an intimation, and I know it's true because of other stories, but the railroad thought that they were God.
Exactly. And they determined where towns went, where the railroad went.
And who got out of the way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but you know, the cowboy was a product of the railroad because the cattle business depended on cattle cars that moved the steers eastward. Lumbermen worked in forests purchased from the railroads and, of course, sent their logs by rail. The fruits of the Northwest and all the harvests of California became cash crops that went back east by rail.
Yeah.
And to make all these things happen, the railroads literally populated the Old West.
So the main line of the railroad that went from back in the Midwest Independence?
I think
Missouri?
I think it was Independence.
Or St. Joe, I can't remember.
Yeah.
All the way to Sacramento.
Right.
And then all the various, if you will, spurs that came off of that to go to the various towns. How many of those happened?
Oh, there was a ton of them. Eventually, I mean, all over the West, if you could get a railroad to another area, that area would grow.
Yeah.
So the nation's, you know, Kansas alone grew from like 364,000 to about 500,000 people by 1880 because of railroad traffic.
Yeah.
But now and then, in their urge to populate the wasteland, sometimes they didn't exactly tell the truth about what was out there. And one guy said that the West was the Great American Desert, fit only for buffalo and Indians. But they had a supporter, a scientist named Ferdinand Hayden.
Ferdinand.
And in his unbridled enthusiasm for the West, Hayden had seized upon the utterly unscientific idea that, quote, rain follows the plow.
I see.
Let me explain that. According to his optimistic notion, when semi-arid lands were plowed, the soil would absorb more water. The water would then evaporate in proper season and would come back down as rain. Rain would produce crops. The moist foliage would foster still more evaporation and bigger rains. In time, these rains would even promote the growth of forests. Thus, the Great American Desert would become a man-made paradise.
Wow.
So his theory was, if you plow the ground, it's going to rain, and you're going to have all the rain you want.
My goodness. And they believed him.
And they believed it. Now, here's another theory. I know we're about out of time. Here's another theory. To try to further expand getting people out here.
Okay.
A Colorado newspaper guy proclaimed that, quote, increase of railroads has the effect of producing more showers. The concussion of air and rapid movement produced by trains and engines affects the electrical conditions of the atmosphere.
You got to be kidding me. They had kooks and crackpots even back then, didn't they?
However, one guy stood apart from them, and that was John Wesley Powell. He said, that's a bunch of hooey, basically.
Hooey was the word he used?
That's exactly what he said.
I can imagine it was.
He said, no. This area can't sustain millions and millions and millions with supposedly rain that's going to come from the trains and the plows and stuff like that. And he said that, you know, the farmers, the people that go out there should get more than the 160 acres. They should get more like 2,000 acres to farm so that they can make a living out of it.
Now, I know that area really well, Tulare and right through there.
Yeah.
Are some of the existing farms today related to the primary farms that settled there?
You know, that's a big question. I mean, you look around our area here, you know, and you know, the little farmers are done. They've sold out. And even in our area here, I think the majority of farming is big farms.
But it would be interesting to know if some of those pioneer families still have families in that area.
And I wouldn't be surprised if some of them gradually bought more land and more land and be able to and prospered
and stayed out of the way of the owners and buckboards.
That's right.
Wow.
So, and you know, there's more I want to talk about regarding towns that were established or not established
because of the railroad.
Well, it was a make or break situation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right here in Cache County, the Albion was the county seat. Mm-hmm. And it would have stayed that way if they could have gotten a railroad up to Albion.
Wow.
And the people of Albion actually started making grade up the hill to go into Albion, but it was never finished, never completed. And so that's why Burley became the county seat.
Really? Yeah. You're just a wealth of information.
It's true.
Dr. History with a wing that is still healing.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems, too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and, of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.